Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show was brought to you by Camp Constitution and heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also listen to this show on Podomatic, Amazon, Spotify, and dozens more platforms. And occasionally we will convert it to YouTube, but we haven't done that lately. YouTube has been giving us some trouble, and we think we might be losing our channel. They found an old video that I posted about, 10 or 12 years ago, entitled A World Without Cancer. It's the story of B-17, and it had simply people giving testimony as how it had been successful. And I guess they see this as a horrible thing, and they took it down after 10 or 12 years. Although you can go on YouTube and find it in other on other channels. So they're selectively finding these old videos and bingo. So I got one strike. I think there's a time when you, if you have one strike and after so many months, the strike's removed, and they're probably going to find a couple more truthful videos. Well, all of our videos are truthful, but when it comes to medical issues, they especially are sense of things of that nature. But we also are on Rumble, and I've been slowly downloading. We have over 1,000 videos on our YouTube channel, and I don't expect to take all of them, but some of them I think are, well, they all seem to have some timelessness to them. But anyway, hey, I had a great time. I was up at WBCQ up in Monticello, Maine with Pastor William Levy. And Pastor Levy expressed to me his desire to build a shortwave radio station in the South Sudan with his ministry, Operation Nehemiah Ministries. And he was all set to purchase some equipment in South Korea. And I said, before you spend a penny, you need to talk to Alan Weiner, who is the one of the top shortwave radio experts in the world. So I introduced them by email. And Alan, who's not in Maine, he's down in Florida now, he responded pretty quickly and invited Pastor Levy up to the station. And we went up there last week. We had a great time visiting the good guys there, Jason and Tom and a few other folks that are involved, not just with WBCQ, but with the gigantic shortwave station they built for, I think it's called World's Last Chance Radio Ministries. It's just an amazing complex, and it's really in a very rural area, in a town of like 600 people. And to see this this incredible station, it's really something. So I do appreciate the work of WBCQ. They do believe they are complete advocates of the right to free speech, something that many other platforms do not allow. Anyway, today, October 24th, is what I call the UN Day of Shame. This is the day in October 24th, 1945, when the UN became an operating entity. Now, classrooms all over the world, and especially in the United States, and it includes government schools and many private schools, are applauding the UN's birthday. They have these model UN programs where they learn all the wonders of the great UN. But if you come to Camp Constitution, you will not be learning the lies that the UN is some kind of great entity, that mankind's last and best hope for peace. It actually is a war-making entity. It is an enemy, not just of the United States, but of all free people. Where do I begin? I've done, of course, lots of presentations on the UN. Starting off, I think it was in the early 1990 when I started my career with the John Birch Society. And in the 26 years I was doing that, I've given literally hundreds of presentations. And more specifically, from 2009 or 10 onward, hundreds, maybe 600 or 700 presentations on Agenda 21. Now it's been renamed Agenda 2030 or Agenda 2050. This is nothing more than a UN plan to destroy or to take over the world. It's all about power and control. Now, there are some people, conservative-minded people, who dismiss my concern with the UN. They say, oh, gee, the UN is just a useless organization, nothing to worry about. Well, I wish it was just useless. I'm sure there are lots of people all over the world who've been victims of the so-called peacekeepers that would have a different position on that, or people living in certain communities adhering to their climate, the UN or the Agenda 21 guidelines, sustainability, where they're paying more for food if they have any food, and other resources, going by UN guidelines and these UN treaties that have been signed all over the world to basically depopulate and destroy the world. And so many people still adhere to that cult, the UN cult. Mm-hmm. So let me begin by saying that the UN, and by the way, it was always rotten. Again, there are some people who say, well, the UN needs to be reformed. The UN was something that was meant well and started off with all the right intentions, but over the years have become a corrupt entity. Well, let me say that it has been a corrupt entity from day one. Why do I say that? Well, the author of its UN charter, or I should say co-author, was a man named Alger Hiss. Now, Alger Hiss was a State Department official. He was upper middle class background, went to the best colleges of the time, the 1920s. He was a law clerk for Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes II and ended up in the Roosevelt administration. But along the way, well, actually it was in college. Now here's this man, a privileged upper middle class man. And in those days, not that many people went to college because, first off, it wasn't necessary. You could make an excellent living without having to get a college degree. But he went to, I forget which one it was. It was one of the Ivy League schools in the Northeast. And he joined the Communist Party USA and eventually became an agent for Joseph Stalin. You imagine somebody from a culture growing up in the United States with all of the wonderful things he had all available. And he in college, and by the way, the colleges have been radicalized a long time ago. It didn't just happen the last 5 or 6 years. It happened a long time ago. So there he became a spy and an agent. And if you look at some pictures of Roosevelt and Stalin at Yalta, you'll see Hiss standing beside or behind Roosevelt. I can imagine what, and at that point he was considered an advisor. He probably said, hey, President Frank Roosevelt, give Stalin everything he wants. And pretty much Roosevelt did. Roosevelt gave Stalin Eastern Europe. Now you say, well, what do you mean gave? How could he do that? Well, Russia was bled white, literally. They had lost a good chunk of their population, spending billions of dollars in a bloody war, mainly with Germany. And they were in no position to bargain. Yet we gave them practically everything he wanted. And not only that, one of the worst atrocities, in my opinion, of the 20th century that the United States was involved in. And this is another thing you won't learn in most of your public schools. As much as they hate America, the public schools, the government schools, the teachers in government schools, and these left-wing private prep schools, as much as the teachers hate America and going out of their way to promote anything negative, they won't talk about Operation Keelhaul. Why? Because they approved of it. They like it, if they even know about it themselves. Operation Keelhaul was something that Stalin and Roosevelt agreed at Stalin to hand over people fleeing Eastern Europe. Now, these weren't Nazi war criminals. These were civilians mainly, and there were some soldiers. There was a lot of what you call the White Army that weren't not pro-Nazi. They were just anti-communist, and they fought along with the Nazis, but they weren't Nazis. And some of them surrendered to the English, some surrendered to the Americans, and they were promised not to be turned over to the Soviets. In fact, that was a mean of condition. That will surrender if you don't turn us over. And we broke those promises, and the numbers, we don't know the exact number, anywhere between 3 to 5 million people were sent back to the Eastern European or into the hands of the Soviets, many of whom were murdered, starved to death, worked to death, and if you were a female, you were raped. There's actually a documentary put out by the BBC. Of course, this stuff comes out 50 years after the fact. That's pretty typical, like the Lusitania. The truth comes out 50 years later when most of the people are no longer alive who either remembered it or participated in it. Anyway, there was this British officer. He was an older gentleman, almost in tears, recounting where, you know, they promised these Cossacks, and they brought the Cossacks, their families, their priests. They were promised they would not be treated. He said, as an officer and a gentleman in the English army, I will not do this. And they did it anyway. And some of the folks committed suicide. Some of the mothers threw their babies into the river and then dived in behind them, committing suicide rather than being at the mercy of the vile communists. And so that's, again, something that you will not learn, but you'll learn it if you come to Camp Constitution. Now, so Alger Hiss wrote the UN Charter, and the rhetorical question was, what good can come from the pen of a Stalinist agent? Now, I should say he co-authored it. The other author, I can't recall his name, but he was a Soviet citizen. He was there on behalf of Stalin. So two communists wrote the UN Charter. Now, when I give presentations, I might ask people how many folks have read the U.S. Constitution. And most hands go up, if not read it from cover to cover, although it's only a few thousand words. They have at least looked at it and familiar with most of it. Then I ask how many people have read the UN Charter, and very few, if any, hands go up. And I'd say that it's important because the UN Charter is diametrically opposed to the U.S. Constitution. And then they came out several years later, in 1945, after the UN was created, they had this thing called the Universal Bill of Rights, or the Universal Rights. And that is even worse, because in that particular document, they'll, in the first few articles, they'll talk about the freedom to travel and the freedom to worship and the right to a vacation. Isn't that great? The right to travel, the right to a job, even the right to a vacation. Now, and then if you read down a little further, and there's articles after that, they'll say, oh, the only exceptions is that, and I'm paraphrasing, you're not consistent with the principles of the UN, or if there's a law against it. So all those rights can be taken away with a stroke of a pen if the rights in that, if the leaders in that country do not want you to have those rights. So it's just a big fraud. These fraudulent people that talk about democracy. Oh, by the way, this year's theme of the UN is fighting racism in peace. Really, UN? With your population control programs geared at blacks and Asians? With your UN peacekeepers, mainly in African, sub-Saharan African countries that murder, or in the case of Rwanda, stand down and allow the murder to happen. No, you are the race. Oh, your soldiers in Katanga. So the United States actually signed on to the UN treaty. There were only two senators, Langler and Shipstead, that voted against it. And by the way, let me just say this. I think a treaty with a group of nations or an entity that's just a collection, it's not a country itself, it's a collection of countries. They have delegates that come to this headquarters in New York. They're not a nation. And I think that any treaty with them should wait on its face. But nevertheless, the United States adopted it. And one of the provisions is a Security Council, the UN Security Council. And there were five members, there were full-time members, and there were several members that rotate every so many years. The United States, the Soviet Union, France, England, and China. And that time in 45, it was nationalist China. Well, actually, it was a couple of years later because before the communists took over. So today you have countries like communist China, you have countries like Syria, and many other nations that are basically considered state sponsors of terrorism on the Security Council. And when the Security Council wants to have a war, send their troops somewhere, we're beholden to that. Now, that's a direct violation of the U.S. Constitution. U.S. Constitution in Article 1, Section 8 grants Congress the power to declare war, not the U.N. And we've been sending soldiers on behalf of the U.N. since the Korean War, and we send them pretty much all over the world. The first time was in Korea during the Korean War. So the first time the United States sent soldiers to fight a UN war was in Korea, and we're still there. That was in 1950-51, and had ended in a stalemate, a truce, not an end. And the goal was not to win. It was simply to keep the North Korean soldiers over a certain particular place, whatever parallel, 48th parallel or whatever it was. We could have won. General MacArthur, who was trained at West Point to win wars, was dismissed. And he basically, his goal was to win, and he was doing a good job. But we were told, well, he wanted to nuke China or put nuclear waste on the battlefield or something like that. Well, even if he wanted to do that, it wouldn't matter. He didn't have the means to do it. He couldn't have done it on his own, regardless of what he recommended. And then it was Vietnam. In Vietnam, was something fought under a UN, the UN auspices called Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, now defunct. And by the way, NATO, which came into existence, I think it was 1948, a few years after the UN was formed, is a UN subdivision. If you read the NATO charter, it basically says that it's there on the behalf of the UN, and nothing they do will interfere with that. And I think they use the term enshrined in the UN charter. Yes, the sacred UN charter. Because this is an example of the deification of man and what man has created, as opposed to Christianity. And the UN has been very hostile to Christianity. They seem to get along very good with the Muslims, and they've got a very good with terrorists like the PLO under the late Yasser Arafat. So that there was one of the earliest examples of UN so-called peacekeepers, and their racist attack was in the province of Katanga, formerly the Belgian Congo, now Zaire, when in the early 60s, 61, 62, they sent mostly white soldiers from Ireland into the Katanga. And the leader there was a man named Dr. Moshe Shombe. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. My late friend Sam Blumenfeld knew him personally, considered him a friend, interviewed him when Shombe was in exile in Madrid, Spain. And Sam made reference to the conspiracy. He was speaking French to Dr. Shombe, and Shombe responded, "Mach oui, la force occulte," means, but yes, the occult forces. So he was aware of the force behind communism. So the UN troops in Katanga, this was a pro-Western peaceful province that was making great inroads. It had a small middle class. It had whites, blacks, Muslims, Jews, Christians. People were getting along. Yeah, isn't it possible? It is possible that whites and blacks and Muslims and Jews and Christians can get along if they want to. But Katanga had something that the world masters wanted. They had all kinds of uranium. That was the whole reason behind it. They didn't want this separate independent state that had, by the way, seceded from the main government because it had been taken over by a man named Patrice Lumumba, who was a Moscow-trained communist. So why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they want to be part of this communist regime? So the UN went in to violating their own treaty. They're not supposed to interfere in domestic disputes. Well, this was a domestic dispute, and they interfered. Full peacekeepers went in. They bombed hospitals, and they murdered and raped and plundered and pillaged. And you didn't know about this. If you took a class or UN model UN, you never heard about this. And to this day, you will not see anything. If you go to the UN bookstore at their headquarters, which I went once, you won't find any reference to Katanga. I looked at a lot of their books, look up the index. You won't find any references to Alger Hiss. No, I mean, the first acting secretary, general secretary, You don't see him there. They do a better job of whitewashing history and talk about an Orwellian memory hole. They perfected it at the UN, and they perfected it in the government schools with the textbooks they use that promote hatred. And again, the left loves to promote hatred of the United States. So you think they'd be talking about Operation Keelhaul, but when the left is the one that orchestrated it, they don't want to talk about it. It's something off the table. So, and also, if you just do a search, UN peacekeepers, I think it was the Ivory Coast. This was just a few years ago. The UN peacekeepers have they exploit children prostitutes, prostitute rings. And I believe there was an example where the people actually went attacked them, and they fired back and killed a lot of civilians. The people had enough, you so-called peacekeepers. They also, in the early 90s, they went into, Rwanda. They had so-called peacekeepers there, and they got wind of the Tutsis that were going to murder the Hutus. And they sort of stood down. Not only did they stand down, but a lot of the Tutsis used UN trucks to transport their goons and thugs to murder these people. Most of them were not shot, but were stabbed to death or clubbed to death. That's how brutal these people are. And there was a Canadian general whose name will come to me probably after the show is Romeo something or other, and after he got out of the military, he had a nervous breakdown. He was found on a bench in Canada, like a park bench. He was drunk, and he had so much guilt. No doubt when you are involved in such enormous crimes, you know, and in his case, he was ordered to stand down. It's not that he took the initiative, but that's what happens. You work with these evil people, and what can you expect? But then if you look in Somalia, it was about 1995. And actually, it was the Village Voice of all papers that broke the story of these UN peacekeepers, mostly Dutch soldiers, that had tortured the black, the Somali nationals, tortured them to death. There's a picture of two UN soldiers smiling as they have this this black civilian Somali over a fire. I understand that in that picture, the man eventually died of his wounds. Not one of these so-called black leaders said a word about it. Jesse Jackson didn't, Al Sharpton, he's so quick to consider everything. If a white policeman shoots a black suspect, it's always racism. It's because America is so evil and must be changed, because all these folks become multimillionaires. Race hustling is big business. But what happens is if you destroy the host, You're going to be out. But see, their hatred is so all consuming. They can't see this. You know, it's the scorpion and the beaver, I think, or some other critter. And the scorpion had across the river, and the scorpion said to the beaver, "Would you take me across the river?" And the beaver said, "Well, you're a scorpion. You're going to bite me, and we'll both drown. You know, I'll die and you'll drown." And the scorpion said, "Why would I bite you? If I bite you, you die and I drown. That wouldn't make any sense." It's okay, I'll take you across. So halfway across, sure enough, the scorpion bit the beaver or whatever critter brought him across. And the beaver was dying of the poison. He says, "Why do you do this?" And the scorpion said, "Because I'm a scorpion. Maybe that's my nature." You know, so it's the nature of leftists to do these kinds of things. And there are some people come out of that, but not many. It is gratifying to meet people who have once embraced all this craziness and have come out. So that's why it's so important for us to expose this. You can go right to Google Images and you could find some UN peacekeepers, so-called in Somalia, and find these pictures. And I'm going to post them. I'm going to post them on our blog in a few hours, our website, campconstitution.net. But let me recommend some books. And it's so important to have an understanding. I mean, you could watch it, and there's lots of videos out there on YouTube. Just put "Get Us Out of the UN." And there's lots of "Get Us Out of the UN" memes, too. So it's so important to share this information, not just, okay, I agree with you, but we need to get out of the UN. Now, under Trump, Trump didn't get us out of the UN, but he got us out of International Planned Parenthood, and he was defunding the UN. And that's how you get out. You defund these monsters. So the first book I read on the UN was called A Fearful Master by Ed Griffin, who's still around, of Red Pill Expo. And I got a chance to meet Ed. He also authored The Creature from Jekyll Island. Actually, I got to know him, and I took him on a tour of New England back in the 1995 or so. And so that's one of the best books, and it was written back in the early 60s. It's out of print, and if you go to Amazon, you're going to pay a little bit of money for it. But there's another book that came out in the early 80s called The United Nations Conspiracy by Robert W. Lee. And this book is an excellent book, and you can get it. You can buy it from us on our website, campconstitution.net, and you can see the bookstore. Then my former colleague and friend William Jasper authored a book called Global Tyranny Step by Step, The United Nations and the Emerging New World Order. That came out in the early 90s. And I'm not sure if we have this on our, but this book could be had for, I would say, short money. And then there's a couple of books written by my late friend and former colleague, William Norman Greig. The first one was Freedom on the Altar, The UN's Crusade Against God and Family. And by the way, there's a picture on this book. There's a picture of the UN meditation room. Now, who do you suppose? Oh, meditation room. That means they're spiritual, so they can't be all bad. Well, they are all bad, because this meditation room is maintained by the Lucius Trust. Who's that? What organization is that? It used to be called the Lucifer Trust, but they changed its name. Somehow, the name Lucifer didn't sit well with some people, so they had to change it. Then he wrote a book, Global Gun Grab, and that's more of a booklet. And that came out in 2001. And again, that can be, we have copies of this book available on our website. And if not, you can get it for short money. And on the cover of the book, there's a statue in front of the UN. It's a civilian handgun, which model? My son would spot it immediately. And it's tied in a knot. And they quote from the Bible, they shall beat their swords into plowshares. Anyway, the problem with the, they say they're spiritual. They're quoting from the Bible. They didn't have the whole passage. And he will be the leader of all nations, meaning God, not the UN. So the left loves taking scripture and twisting it and torturing it and destroying its meaning. And another former colleague of mine, Steve Bonta, wrote a book called Inside the United Nations. We do have plenty of copies of this on sale. And again, this is more of a booklet. And this was designed during the Get Us Out of the UN campaign launched by the John Birch Society back in the early 2000s. Still a good idea, of course, to get us out of the UN. And so there's lots of resources. Go to our website, campconstitution.net. You can even see some free downloads we have on the topic. Scroll down. We have plenty of YouTube videos. John McManus, who was one of the experts on the UN, gave a presentation at our camp a few years ago, and that's available. There's just lots of info out there. And we got about a minute left. So I do want to thank you for listening, and I encourage you, please share this information. If you like what you hear, if you don't like what you hear, because obviously it's some bad news, the good news is they're catching on. And we're very optimistic. I don't put a lot of faith in politicians and politics, but we have to start somewhere. As Reverend Kraft would say, the political realm is nothing more than the physical manifestations of the spiritual. It's a spiritual problem. We have a sin problem, as Reverend would say, not a skin problem. And we need revelation and we need revival. And that's the solution, folks, ultimately. Well, you've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. And until next week, may God richly bless you.